Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is your morning show host, Julie Calamine. I'm normally joined by Phil Huff, but Phil is away today because he's got a lot to do with the primary. I've got a morning show co-host this morning whose name is Don Childress. He's helping me out. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Julie. Pleasure to be on with Sandpoint's finest show.
Oh, thank you. At least it's an outdoor show, so I have to agree with you there. I'm about to introduce our morning show guest, but before that, I'm going to talk about the weather because everyone cares about the weather in North Idaho in May. And today is a great day for us. We have a high of 84 degrees, sunny tonight, mostly clear, and a low of 53. That's not really very cool. We're used to nights in the 40s lately. Wednesday, we've got a chance of showers, 40%, but the picture I'm looking at from the weather service looks like sun and clouds. And then a high of 78, which is beautiful. Wednesday night, we've got low of 53. Here comes the rain, however. Wednesday night, showers likely. Thursday, showers likely with a high of 65. Thursday night, a chance of showers. Friday, a chance of showers. And on it goes. So it's some sun, some rain. Typical spring in North Idaho.
And a typical lost in the 50s weekend.
Yes. Let's just look to the weekend. I'm almost afraid to do it, but I'm going to. For those of you who want to have your cars out, here it comes. I've got to just move this. Well, guess what? Saturday looks like mostly sunny, guys. So we've got a good chance for Saturday. And Sunday, as of right now, the forecast is a 20% chance of showers with mostly sunny. So it's looking pretty good, Don.
We're glad to see that.
That's right. Don, what have you been up to? I heard you've been doing a bit of mushrooming.
I did do a little bit of mushrooming. The fishing is kind of slowed down right now with the high water, so mushrooms have taken over. So people who want to get out, it's a great sport to have, and the delicious meal afterwards is worth it.
That's right, and it's a good alternative to fishing when the water is high. But speaking of water, that brings us into our guest for this morning, and we've got a very interesting morning show. We're being joined this morning by Priest River Cold Water Bicep Concept. What? Coordinator, supervisor, Kira Sitari. Good morning, Kira.
Good morning, Julie. Thanks for having me.
And Kira, what is your title?
I am the environmental staff biologist for Idaho Department of Fish and Game.
Very good. And I understand you're a Minnesotan.
That's correct. You haven't heard it yet, but there might be some long R's in this interview.
That's right. We'll leave Minnesota be for the moment because I know it gets boring. And our other guest is really feeling fortunate that we have him this morning because he's come a little ways. And this is Joe Maroney. And your title is Director of Fishery and Water Resources for the Kalispell Tribe. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Julie.
And the reason we have Joe is because he's involved with a previous cold water bypass project.
Yep.
At Sullivan Lake.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. Well, the topic this morning is a concept for a cold water bypass in between, well, from Priest Lake to through into Priest River to improve the water quality. And we're going to start for a minute with Don just to tell us, well, we're going to ask you all to tell us about yourselves, but we'll start with you, Don Childress. And why are you here this morning? Who are you with?
Okay, this is, I've been in Sandpoint about 15 years. And I came from California. I knew when I retired, I wanted to go to a state that had a little less population, a little less fishing pressure. So looking at the map, I looked at all these great little blue lines, thinking that these streams are going to be great fishing streams. Well, I didn't do fully of my research. I got up here and found out in the summertime, Lightning Creek almost dries up. Rapid Lightning Creek almost dries up. So our area dewaters quite a bit. So that's been a little bit perplexing for me, although we have good fishing within a day's drive or so of here in Washington and Montana. But started looking at Priest River, which looks like a really good river, and found out that that gets really too warm in the summertime to hold a resident trout population. So I'm a longtime member of Trout Unlimited, so we started talking about that. Got a hold of Chip Corsi, the head of the fishing game in Coeur d'Alene, and he'd had this idea of a siphon for a few years and sort of started to talk about that more and more, and to fortunately has just appointed Kira as a project manager for that. So we're going to be hearing from Kira about what this cold water siphon really consists of.
All right. So that's how Trout Unlimited and you personally got involved in it. We will now move over to Kira. Kira, who is Chip Corsi?
Chip Corsi is a regional supervisor up here for Northern Idaho for Idaho Department of Fish and Game.
All right. And you work for him?
I work directly under him. Yep.
All right. Well, Kira, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became involved in this project.
So Don has a story of finding North Idaho from all the streams. As you mentioned, Julie, I grew up in Minnesota, and I always wanted to be a marine biologist, like many young women. And I went to undergrad for biology. I worked hard, and I actually got a job working in the Florida Keys on dolphins. And it turned out to be really boring. You're sitting on a boat all day long. You can't move around. And you're lucky if you see a dorsal fin every couple hours. And so what I ended up was going back to the fisheries jobs that I thought was a stepping stone along the way. But it turns out you can get paid to hike up to these beautiful high mountain lakes and rivers and touch the study species that you see, and you get to see them every day. So I've always loved fisheries, and now it's been about 8 years I've been working on salmon and trout restoration out west.
All right. That's great. And Joe, tell us about how you came to be involved in the project and working with the Kalispell tribe, the Sullivan Lake project.
Yeah. So I've been with the Kalispell tribe for going on 24 years. So quite a while. And how we became involved, at least the tribe aspect involved with the Sullivan, is it had to do with the Boundary Dam relicensing and also the Sullivan Lake surrender. And what we were doing is just kind of developing some, you know, protection, mitigation, enhancement ideas. And that's kind of how that concept, you know, came to fruition. And that just kind of, you know, teed off a little bit some of the interest that the tribe had is, you know, could you do something similar to that in the Priest Lake system? Because it's, you know, kind of very similar. So I think that's some of the things we're going to be talking about a little bit later.
But. Sure. And let's back up a minute. How did you, for all these years ago, how did you find yourself to be working with the tribe, the Kalispell tribe?
So I went to school over on the west coast of Washington, and that was when I decided I wanted to be a fish biologist. My parents had told me for quite some time to do something that you enjoy, and I love the outdoors. Initially, when I was in college, I took one quarter, and I thought at one time I wanted to be a disc jockey. Here I am on the radio. That didn't pan out, but I definitely wanted to do something I loved, and I love fisheries. So I went to school. I worked 4 years in central Idaho doing stream surveys, snorkeling, counting fish, some of the things that people enjoy to do during the summertime was what I was getting paid to do. So when I first started working for the tribe, there was 5 people in the natural resource department. Now there's probably about 50 full-time employees.
Nice.
That we have.
So that's nice.
Get involved in a lot of different projects. And so one of the reasons why the tribe was interested in the Priest Lake system is because that's the Aboriginal area of where the Kalispell tribe used to be.
Ah, well, we're going to come back to you, but let's return to Kira for a moment. And Kira, would you tell us, just tell us a little bit about this project and why it's come to the attention of so many people?
Sure. And Don set this up really well. Priest River is this gorgeous scenic river, and there's not a lot of fish in it. Fish and Game has done surveys over the years, and most times they look about the same. It's very low trout densities. You actually see about 10 times more cutthroat trout in systems like the St. Joe or the North Fork Coeur d'Alene, kind of your classic fly fishing rivers in this area that draw a lot of tourists. This Priest River looks very similar. It's got a ton of public land surrounding it, and there's just not a lot of fishing opportunity there. And what Fish and Game has identified as the limiting factor is temperature in that river. Priest River is designated as cold water impaired, so it can't support the native trout species that live in North Idaho, namely bull trout and cutthroat trout. So we have been looking at the system a long time and trying to figure out the best way to improve the fishery and improve cold water habitat there.
And is it too warm all of the time?
Actually, it's too warm in the late summer and going into fall. And that's a really critical time, especially for bull trout that are trying to spawn. They're trying to move around. So Priest River is a regulated river, and it is at the head of it is the outlet dam at Priest Lake, and that regulates how much water can come into Priest River. So you only have so much water coming in, and that water ends up heating up quite a bit in Priest River. Basically, August and September are kind of the critical times that we're seeing really warm water.
Yeah, and what do you all think the reason is for that? Why is it so warm then?
Part of the reason is that the water that's coming into Priest River is coming in from the warmest part of the lake. The lake water is feeding the river. And what's coming in is kind of that warmest upper portion of the lake. We call it the epilimnion of the lake. So that gets all the solar radiation. And that water is feeding Priest River. And actually, if you look at kind of the temperatures from top to bottom in Priest River, the warmest part of Priest River is right below the outlet dam. It actually cools as you go downstream. So that's a big indication of where that warm water is coming from.
That's interesting. Why don't you tell us or describe for us the concept that's been developed?
Sure. So right now it is very much a concept. And it's not a new concept. If you've ever heard of a tailwater fishery, this is the same idea. Hatcheries use this a lot as well. Basically, what you have is Priest Lake is stratified in the summer. It separates into three distinct temperature layers. You have that warm epilimnion at the top of the lake. There's kind of a transition zone, and then a cold water layer at the bottom, which actually is most of the lake volume in the summer. At about 60 feet, you see that temperature change from a warm layer to a cold layer. And basically, the bypass concept would take cold water from the bottom of the lake and use that to cool lower Priest River. So it wouldn't change the amount of flows coming into Priest River, but it would just change the temperature.
And how is that done? What is the mechanism?
The mechanism would be a pipe. It's basically it's basically a gravity siphon. If you've ever drained a horse or cow trough, you basically have the same system where you have a hose moving water. You have to prime the hose a little bit, and the pipe would be the same thing. So you wouldn't need to be actively pumping and expending energy after you take the water from that lower layer and move it basically downstream into the river.
So it truly is a siphon.
Kara, my understanding is that a lot of dams will take their draw water from the bottom of the dam rather than have it flow over the top. What's the situation with Priest River? How's that different?
Yeah, so what we have in Priest Lake is a very shallow bay, an outlet bay. Typically in these bigger dam and reservoir systems, like Hungry Horse Dam has this setup and several in the Southwest. They're taking water directly from that lower layer. What we have is about a half mile of outlet bay is a long, shallow bay to get through. So right now, it's the idea is just a very long pipe. It's,
So you're basically saying that you can't just let water out of the bottom of the dam because it's not going to, the cold water won't come from there.
Yeah,
wouldn't be able to.
The deepest that outlet bay gets is 40 feet. Most of it is much, much shallower than that. So, you can't get down to that really low layer unless you pipe it.
Got it. That makes sense. Well, we've heard some of the benefits, but are there more benefits to a plan like this?
Yeah, I certainly don't, want to solely focus on a fishing opportunity, although that's, what my end game would be personally, to see a beautiful, floatable, wadeable river to fly fish on. So cutthroat trout and bull trout are two species in North Idaho that we want to protect. Having cold water would provide a thermal refuge for these fish that are being pinched by, more and more drought years and lower snowpack. So it would be a conservation measure. And bringing a fishery to the area would improve the economy. I mean, it's a boon to local economies. We've seen it around the Coeur d'Alene system, the St. Joe system. These areas bring in millions of dollars every year from license sales, gas sales, lodging, all the things associated that go with fishing. So we'd really like to bring that kind of boon to the area as well.
Sure. I was at a meeting where you were speaking about this project in Priest River. Don, you were there too. And there were residents who lived along Priest River that were concerned about very low flows in late summer. Will this change that condition?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it will not. The lake has a statutory requirement to keep lake levels at 3 feet during the summer recreation season. So we don't have that knob to turn, but this is an alternative we see that would benefit both the water quality and the fishery.
Sure. And why is that? Tell me just briefly about the statutory requirement for those that might not know about it.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. And it really came to a head in 2015. If your listeners will remember, that was a very low water year. And there was a question of whether to keep water in the lake or keep it in the river. And the lawyers went to work and found that the lake has a senior water right to the river. So the Idaho Department of Water Resources manages that outlet dam, and it's for recreation. So they need to meet that lake level requirement. Basically, that puts a squeeze on Priest River and how much flow can go downstream. So that's the secondary water right, and that's something we need to work around, and that's one of the reasons why the bypass was proposed.
Water rights in the West.
Kira, is there enough springs and residual water coming out of the creeks that if in another low water year there's nothing coming out of the pipes that can keep fish alive?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say as you're moving downstream, especially some of the bigger tributaries like East River would be able to sustain some kind of flows, or at least little pockets of cold water pool habitat. But it gets pretty skinny. I've heard from residents. I haven't been in the water during those very low water years, but I've heard, it's just wet rocks in some places.
Mm-hmm. And when we've been out there, Don, during the summertime, is those fish are just stacked in a lot of those holes. The mm-hmm. mouth of the East River, Quartz Creek, a lot of these other tributaries, is those fish are stacked in there like cordwood. Mm-hmm. And then you have nothing in between until really hit the next tributary junction.
From a sport standpoint, would be different than a conservation standpoint, where you probably should not fish for those fish that are stacked in those little pools.
I know they're kind of looking at that, at least in the lower Columbia. Salmon and steelhead are migrating up because you have these cold water refugia areas that fish key in on. And lo and behold, those are great places to go fish.
Yeah, obviously.
But probably stressful for the fish if they're all together. Yeah. I would think so. Kira, do you have any idea how expensive this project might be?
So that's actually kind of the next phase of the project that I'm jumping into, is getting a decent cost estimate. Really, we don't have a good idea of how much it would cost. Just given the size of the pipe, we are expecting in the millions. And what we've been doing is turning to neighbors like the Kalispell Tribe and seeing what the pricing was over at Sullivan Lake.
Good. So at least there's a bit of history, and we will be getting to that soon. Are there other stakeholders who would participate in this, or will it be mainly the state of Idaho who will be paying for it?
As Don's sitting across the table here, absolutely, there's other stakeholders. You know, this is a big, expensive project, and it takes not just financial support, but it's also going to take community support to see this project through. So, yeah, I mean, I have two of my partners here at the table, TU and the Kalispell Tribe.
That's right.
There's also, you know, communities like Priest River, the Outlet Bay community, and folks around the lake. I mean, there's, yeah.
Yeah, lots of interested parties that might see a benefit to helping with this project if it if the study results in a go for you all. And then are there really any alternatives to this if we want a cold water fishery in Priest River?
So our Fish and Game's original attempt was to stock rainbow trout in Priest River, just to, you know, if you're aiming for a fishery, let's stock trout. They didn't stick around. You know, we kept doing those studies since the 70s and just never saw good trout densities. So there was a little fishery, but yeah, we stopped stocking rainbows in the 90s. Other options are usually to improve shading, to cool the water down. Priest River is just so wide. We're not sure how well that would work. And then along with this cost assessment that I'm working on getting, we're bringing engineers on board, which is great because I'm a biologist, not an engineer. And I'm sure they will have other ideas for alternatives.
Something to look forward to when the concept study comes out. And when do you expect that?
So we have a request for proposals headed out in the next few weeks. And the selected contractor will work on that for about the next year. And then we'll be able to share those results the beginning of 2019.
Okay. So it's a little ways out, but it's not many, many years out.
Yep.
It's great. Well, that was a really good summary of the thoughts about Priest Lake and Priest River. Let's take a song break, and then we're going to hear about a project that's complete from Joe. The song that I've selected is Beargrass with Rivers in My... And that was Beargrass with Rivers in My Shoes. Kind of a nice song for our morning topic, I should say. And back to our folks joining us to talk about rivers and river bypass projects. And for those of you just joining us, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. If you didn't hear all of the program this morning, we will be posting a podcast afterwards, so you can go to krfy.org, click on the podcast tab, and listen to the entire program. It's Julie Calamine, your KRFY Tuesday morning show host. We've just heard from Kira Sitari, and she was telling us about a concept plan for Priest Lake and Priest River. And now we're going to be chatting with Joe Maroney, who works with the Kalispell Tribe. He's the Director of Fishery and Water Resources. And Joe, you have experience with a project that's been completed.
Yes, Julie, I've had for at least probably the last 8 or 9 years, been working on the Sullivan Bypass, Sullivan Siphon. And that project has been, you know, in place since 2015. So, you know, it's kind of interesting to be able to see, you know, a project that's been completed, working, has some benefits, and then, you know, kind of using that information to see, you know, how it can work in the Priest River system.
Why don't you tell us the whole story of the lake, the history, how the concept came about for this lake, and how construction went, everything, how long it took, et cetera.
So from start to finish, so we were thinking about this concept when we were going through the Boundary Dam relicense. And Boundary Dam is owned and operated by Seattle City Light. It's on the Pondre River. It's about a mile north from the Canadian border.
So, is it a hydro dam?
Yes. So it's, okay. So it's a hydro project. So from where Sandpoint is, if you head immediately downstream, you hit Albany Falls Dam. And then you go another 50 miles, you hit Box Canyon Dam, which is owned and operated by Pondre County PUD. And then you go another 18 to 20 miles downstream, you hit Boundary Dam, which is owned by Seattle City Light. So they were going through a relicensing process in the late 2000s, so around 2007, 8, 9. And when projects that are privately owned, not federal projects, you have to go through a relicensing process through FERC, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
every decade or something?
So initially when projects were built and constructed, they were issued a 50-year license. So you have 50 years to operate that project within these sideboards, and that's what you do. So there was a lot of projects that got licensed in the late 50s and early 60s, and a lot of those were coming up for relicense. I think at one point in time, they were kind of calling them the baby boom of FERC licenses that were coming online, particularly in the Northwest.
That was sort of the era of reservoirs and hydro.
Hydropower, and we need lots of power, so we're just going to build lots of dams, lots of places. So, so we were going through this relicense process for Seattle City Light at Boundary Dam, and we were thinking of what we call PM&Es, their protection, mitigation, and enhancement. And so you look at the dam's impacts and what it has, and then you try to offset those with protection mitigation, you know, through habitat enhancement and lots of other types of projects, a conservation hatchery, try to improve survival, upstream fish passage at the dam, downstream fish passage, lots and lots of different things. So literally we were sitting down, there was myself, there was a guy from the U.S. Forest Service and a guy from the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we're in a room thinking about all these PM&Es that, you know, that were kind of going. And literally I drew on a dry erase board about, hey, what about this concept where we have the cold water, because we knew that it was a problem. Very similar to what's happening in the Priest system, is where you have the very top layer of water being very, very warm, which is warming the river or stream immediately downstream of there. So literally it went from a concept of drying it on a dry erase board, thinking about it, looking at other projects where you have these tailwater fisheries around the West. And that is really kind of how it kind of got, you know, the momentum going from there.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was pretty interesting. And that was very late in the license, in the relicense process, and being able to get that into that as a PM&E and as a license article was pretty amazing.
What happened next?
So then when we went from the concept, then we started doing the modeling. We started looking at some SQL modeling, which is it's a water dynamic and able to determine not only water velocity and flow, but also temperature. So, and particularly with water, it's pretty easy, because if you have a certain amount of flow of a certain amount of temperature, and then you add a different volume of water at a different temperature, that mixes, and then you have that mixed temperature. So we were doing this modeling exercise to see what would happen for this outlet creek, which drains into Sullivan, what that would do. And we went through that modeling exercise, and lo and behold, as we found that we can significantly reduce the water temperatures, particularly in Outlet Creek, where we could reduce water temperatures by 6 degrees centigrade. I talk in Celsius, and what that is in Fahrenheit, I'd have to do the math, but multiply that by 1.8. So, and then we started taking a look at what that would do with Sullivan Creek. And then we found out that, wow, we could really cool temperatures, or, you know, at least keep them from warming in the entire Sullivan Creek watershed.
Pretty exciting.
So it was pretty exciting. And then
how long is Sullivan Creek?
From where Outlet Creek, so you have the lake itself, and then you have this Outlet Creek, which is basically what drains that top layer, or did drain that top layer of the lake. Mm-hmm. It would flow about a quarter mile and then hit Sullivan Creek proper. And then from there downstream, you're probably talking about 18 miles.
Okay, thanks.
So a pretty significant river, really.
Yeah, it's one of the largest as far as stream flows that we have, what I call in the lower Ponderé, that's in the Washington portion.
Yeah, so, very neat.
It's pretty big.
All right.
So that was really, and then we started taking a look at, okay, what are the impacts on the lake? So we started taking a look at things as productivity, what would it do as far as on pH, what would it do on the fisheries community that's already in there. And we had already had quite a bit of fisheries and limnological information collected in the lake itself. So that was, once we kind of figured that out is we're not going to harm the lake by drawing from, you know, cold water below. Then we started looking at the concepts on how you do that.
Sure. I think that would be a concern people raise. It was raised at the meeting a few weeks ago. Will it affect the lake if you draw out the cold water? But it sounds like it's minimal in both situations.
Yeah, and our process for Priest Lake will be a little bit different as we get this cost estimate. If that's even feasible with that huge long pipe, we will look into what that might do to the lake ecology. Our prediction for Priest Lake is it would be very similar to Sullivan Lake. These are, you know, oligotrophic, so they don't have a lot of nutrients coming into the lakes. We would expect very similar ecology and limnology. But it's definitely worth the due diligence because that's a very important lake to a lot of people.
It sure is. So
one of the things that we had looked at was, so that very top layer that Kira was talking about, that's where all of the productivity happens. And so that's where you get the phytoplankton, the zooplankton, which, you know, the fish get nice and big for Dawn to catch. So with that top layer of water continually being released out of the lake, you are essentially losing some productivity out of the lake. And one of the things that we were thinking about as we were going through this process is, you know, can you, you know, will that actually enhance the lake potentially by keeping those nutrients in a very nutrient poor lake in? And so that was, you know, that remains to be seen, but that's in theory that will possibly work.
Are you watching that or studying that?
Yeah, there's studies that are going to be happening over a period of years. Mainly what we've been looking at for the last several years is, does the cold water pipe work?
Right. Well, what happened next? It got installed, obviously.
Yeah, so it got installed in 2015 in February, and the total cost of that project was $4.1 million. The pipe it's a 48 inch inside diameter pipe, and it's 54 inches outside diameter. So it gives you an idea. It's a, you know, 6 inch thick pipe and it's 900 feet long.
Oh my.
Yes. So it goes down 120 feet into Sullivan and it draws, 6C water. So very cold. But we also have that ability to, once the siphon concept it's working, you're able to dial that in. So what we were trying to key in on is what the temperatures were in above Sullivan Creek, where before where Outlet Creek comes in, because we wanted to mask it. But I mean, we would really have the ability to super cool Sullivan Creek if we wanted to. But the idea is we were working out a management scheme where we wanted those temperatures, you know, to mimic what they were above Sullivan before Outlet Creek came in and got it really warm.
Sure. When you say dial it in, how is it that you're able to adjust the temperature at the outflow?
It's a valve. So it's all about how much water that you have coming out. So there's still some water that is coming through the dam because you have some leakage. But you do have that ability to, you know, essentially just kind of turn a knob and, okay, we need to either increase flows or decrease flows.
Yeah, sounds like an important feature.
Yes.
Yes. All right, so it was completed, and it's been 3 years, 2 years, 3 years?
It's been 3 years. So it was installed, couple, you know, minor issues and, you know, some collecting data, having some issues with that, but when we started really taking a look at it, and particularly in water years, you know, 16 and 17 last year, is you see some very significant benefits. So you used to have this Outlet Creek that would be 20 degrees C, and then you would have Sullivan Creek that would be around 12 or 13 degrees C, and you'd have that mixing zone where those two water bodies would come together, and it would be, you know, 17 or 18 or warmer. Now what we're seeing is those lines are so close together that they're in the neighborhood of, you know, 12 to 13 degrees C. And that's during the time of the key time is basically from around the 1st of July until that first week or two of September, when you start having low flows and you start getting really, really warm water temperatures.
All right. Okay. And for us non-metric dummies, that would be me, what is what temp C are we trying to stay below for trout?
So 20 C, which is almost 69 degrees Fahrenheit, it's pretty warm.
All right.
When you're trying to target around 13 or 14 degrees C, that's okay. In the neighborhood of like 54, 55 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay. That helps.
And Joe, does it cool the whole creek? Does it?
Yeah, it cools.
Creek going down?
We're also really lucky because where Outlet Creek comes down, there was another project that was just completed. I don't know if anybody's heard about it. There was Mill Pond Dam, which came out last year. So it was, that stream has seen some significant improvements, at least within the last 5 years.
The dam came out, so the water's
dam came out, yep.
Yeah, good. That's great. Well, what do we know about the plants and the animals in the stream? Anything? What are you learning?
As far as from a fisheries standpoint, we're still looking at that. And one of the components of Seattle's license is to, you know, monitor the trout population. So the key fish that we're interested in, particularly in Sullivan, is bull trout and West Slope cutthroat. So we've been doing, you know, quite a few studies and, you know, and it's still what I would call relatively early in the implementation of its license. But, you know, we plan on, you know, kind of seeing what the benefits and the fruits of this bear. What we can see, at least right now from a temperature standpoint, is we're seeing some significant reductions in temperature.
Joe, if my memory is right, in Priest River, the trout population is 2/100 per 100 square meters. Do you have any knowledge of what the Sullivan was before this project?
We do. Off the top of my head, I don't know what those are. We have some projects that we're implementing in the Sullivan Creek where we're doing non-native brook trout removals. Mm. So we're trying to get rid of the brook trout, promoting West Slope cutthroat with Mill Pond Dam being removed. Now we have passage from the Pondere River all the way up through for bull trout. So, you know, migratory life histories of fish is pretty important. And now that we have this cool water that's coming out of the lake, I mean, it's going to be really, it'd be a very interesting graduate project study to, you know, capture at least over the next decade to see kind of how that changes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, because fish kind of follow cold water, right? So they'll be drawn to that,
yeah.
I would think.
Yep. They love cold water.
Right.
So I know for me, the best temperature I operate in is 70 degrees. Once it starts hitting 100, I start getting pretty lethargic. And with fish, it's really the same way. So, and you see this also with some of the dam removals that have happened with Elwha, with Condit that have come out, those fish that are occupying in areas where, you know, they hadn't historically been for, you know, 50 plus years.
Right. Well, you mentioned a dollar figure for this project. I think you said it was around $4 million.
Mm-hmm.
And who paid for that?
So
invoice.
Yeah, so it was a 50-50 cost share between Seattle City Light and Pondere PUD.
Ah.
And so it was part of, and it was a unique situation where it was a Sullivan surrender of that dam on Sullivan Lake, where they relinquished that, and then they paid half of the total cost, and then Seattle City Light paid the other half.
So the state of Idaho really wasn't, well, that's Washington.
Yep. Yeah.
So the state of Washington didn't really have to contribute.
Nope.
No, interesting.
Nope.
It's interesting.
Joe, for those of us who aren't familiar with that area, where exactly is Sullivan Lake, Sullivan Creek?
So it's up by the town of Medellin Falls, really, you know, pretty close to the border. In, you know, what I would call the very northeast portion of Washington. Okay. So it's quite a ways up there.
And there was a fire up there last year, wasn't there?
Yes. Yeah, there's been a couple fires over the last few years.
How's the mushroom? How's the mushroom? not to change the subject.
Nice try, Don Childress. I'll ask our two experts, do you feel the projects are similar enough that the conclusions drawn from Sullivan Lake cause you to expect similar results if Priest Lake has a bypass?
I'll jump in. I think there are a lot of biological similarities and lake ecology similarities we can look to. There are differences that we need to be aware of. Outlet Bay is longer than the bay that they piped water through at Sullivan Lake. And as Joe was describing, you know, this is way up by Medellin Falls. It's surrounded by all Forest Service land. Is that correct? Outlet Bay has a community there that a pipe would be going through, and they are certainly tuned into what we're doing. So, the goal in installing this pipe in the lake is to keep all the existing uses that are in Priest Lake right now. That's navigation, recreation, and even down to aesthetics. So, there are certainly some new pieces that we need to work with, and we want to go slow and we want to get folks' input on it.
So true. With more residents, more challenges.
Absolutely. The other piece I'll note is the Priest River is longer. Priest River is 45 miles, so that cold water has to do more work and go further. But while the Kalispell tribe was getting Mill Pond Dam taken out and installing the Sullivan Bypass and doing all their monitoring, they also contracted out some hydrology experts at Portland State to do modeling in Priest River. And so they were looking at kind of that mixing that Joe was describing and what we could maybe expect if we put in this bypass as to what kind of temperatures. And that was almost an 18 degree Fahrenheit drop in temperatures right below the dam. That's bumping that temperature down into suitable bull trout and cutthroat water temperatures. So, and those effects lasted at least for the first 30 miles of the stream. You see temperature reductions. So that's really cool.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
That really would be. Well, yeah, that's encouraging.
I was pretty excited after seeing some of the results of what we were doing at Sullivan. That was what gave me the idea to take a look at the pre-system. And so, yeah, as Gary was saying, it was in 2013, maybe it's 12 or 13, we hired Portland State University to do this SQL model, very similar to what we had done in Sullivan Creek, and did a modeling. And the first caveat that we had was is there is no adjustment of lake level elevation.
Ah, that was none, a set.
Yeah,
a given.
That was, yeah, we should have probably had that in, you know, size 30 font and bold right on front. But, you know, there was so what we did is we also collected quite a bit of temperature information to help drive that model. And what we did is we took a look at if you're drawing from that cold water from the bottom, and if there was, you know, there was a couple different temperatures that we were using. One was 8, one was 10 degrees C, and that was based upon some information that had been collected. And then we said, okay, based upon this flow that we were using for that particular year, what if 25% of that flow was at 8 degrees C, or 50% or 75% of that flow? And it's amazing, as Kara was saying, what that impact is and how that carries down through.
All right. Well, I'm hearing you did a lot of modeling and looked at a lot of variables. And to save the non-scientists that are out there listening, I'm going to move on to a new topic and bring our interview to a conclusion.
Can I just have one question first?
Sure.
Thanks. Obviously, Sullivan Creek didn't have the political issues that Priest has. How do you handle a really low water year like 15? Does the lake level fluctuate in Sullivan Creek, or are you able to keep that steady?
In 2015, it did drop, the stream itself. And what we also did is we had constraints on the lake as well, where it had to be kept at a certain elevation for summer recreation. And those were some of the operating constraints, and, you know, very similar to what there is on
similar,
the
yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
So trying to keep the lake folks happy and also the river alive and mm-hmm. holding fish. Yeah, it sounds like a good compromise. Well, wondering from both of you if our listeners would be interested in knowing more about this topic, where might they go? Do you have a phone number or website they could access?
You can find me at the Idaho Department of Fish and Game website. I do want to note that we have an informational meeting that the Priest Lake Sportsmen are hosting a week from today. May 22nd at the Priest Lake Elementary School at 6:30 p.m.
Okay, and if folks wanted directions and information to get to that, is there a website they can go to?
I would just call our Fish and Game office down in Coeur d'Alene. It is 208-769-1414.
Very good. And Joe, if folks would like to learn more about the Sullivan Lake Project, where might they look?
Probably the best place to look is Pondere PUD website, which is popud.org. And along the bar, there's a list that says either projects or Sullivan Lake, and it has everything that we did from start to finish. It has the studies, it has the designs, it has some of the reports that have been collected, you know, to date. So it's, you know, very, very informative.
Very good. And Don, as a representative for Panhandle Trout Unlimited, can folks contact you or the organization? What's your contact information?
Yes, we also have a website, panhandletu.org. And can I say a word about TU?
Yes, of course. It sounds like Panhandle Trout Unlimited's been involved in this project and encouraging, and I know that you've been involved in the meetings for the project.
We're certainly one of the biggest fans and cheerleaders for this project. How, you know, what our other functions are, you know, we'll see what comes out. Trout Unlimited, when I first got here, I was looking around for a fishing club to join, and short of going down to Coeur d'Alene, there wasn't one, and then I found out about Trout Unlimited, which actually is a conservation group, though most of us do fish and fly fish, but not everybody does. And our mission statement is that of conserving, protecting, and restoring North America's cold water fisheries and their habitats. So that's really what we do. We do talk fly fishing, so if anybody out there is interested in joining a fly fishing organization and getting to know other fly fishermen that fish in the area, Trout Unlimited would be a good way to do it.
That's for sure. And another part of the mission is education. I know you're going to be involved in an activity this Friday.
We are. We've been teaching the Clark Fork Junior Senior High School their outdoor track. 2 weeks ago, we met in Bonner's Ferry and did a fishing seminar, an intense seminar, where we told about what fishing is, the types of fish. We tied flies, and we went out and had casting practice, learned to cast, and went fishing. And some people even caught fish.
Right. And you also taught safe catch and release, I believe.
We do teach catch and release there. That's one of our principles of conservation. And this coming Friday, we're doing the same thing at the Water Discovery Center in Sandpoint. We've got another group of Clark Fork students coming down. So if anybody would like to come out and see what that's like, or we actually could use some more instructors also. So if anybody likes to cast, would like to come out and help these kids cast and catch a fish, that would be great to do that.
And how will they get in touch with someone?
They could call me. And my phone number is 208-290-7109.
All right.
Our president of the Trout Unlimited is Bill Love, and I don't have his phone number on me, but he's also very, very happy to take any
questions
and issues.
I think we can find him at Facebook under the Panhandle Trout Unlimited. I think so.
I'm sure of that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Another thing that we've got coming up is Trout Unlimited is going to partner with the Geological Survey and Kalispell Tribe to profile the water temperatures from the Priest Lake out dam downstream. We're going to be doing this in the low water section this year, probably in August.
Neat.
So it'll be kind of a fun adventure to get in your kick boats or float tubes and float down and check the water periodically. We also just finished, not too long ago, the fly fishing film tour that we sponsored, and that was very successful. We also had Julie's telling me to wind this up.
You're not supposed to tell when I give hand signals.
I was hard to do that.
So let's get on with the program.
There we go. Well, I want to thank our guests this morning, Don Childress of Panhandle Trout Unlimited, and Joe, I got to get your last name correct. Joe Maroney, director.
Correct.
Thank you, of Fishery and Water Resources for the Kalispell Tribe. And finally, Kira Sitari from Idaho Fish and Game.
Thank you for having me.
That's.
And this is just the wrap-up of the show.
And all right, that was an interesting version of Yonder Mountain Spring Band, River. We had a few interesting pauses because it was a live version, but back to the morning show. If you're just joining us, this is Julie Calamine with KRFY, community-supported radio for North Idaho. And this morning's show was focused on the Priest River Lake and Dam proposed bypass project. And I was here with Don Childress, Joe Maroney, and Kira Sitari. We're now here with just Don Childress and myself, and we're going to talk about upcoming events with KRFY, and we will have a bit of time, just a tiny bit of time, for upcoming events. So, mark your calendar. On the 25th, we're going to have 7:30 p.m. at the Panada. That'll be a free benefit for KRFY and the Panada named Rumble, the Indians Who Rocked the World. Hope we'll see you there. And as our morning is winding up, it looks like we won't have time for our upcoming events. We're down to just a few seconds left, but please be sure you make it to Lost in the 50s and be sure to get out and vote. Have a great week.
What am I, chopped liver? Sorry.